Talking now about getting the most out of your personal computer. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you listening in on the Ideas Network. My guest today, Peter Green of InfoStar, with us once again. He comes by monthly. Usually it's on the first Monday of the month, but with the holiday, we just moved him over a day off Labor Day. So he's with us today. He'll be back the first Monday of next month as well to talk about your computer needs. Certainly, if you have some questions or comments for him, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org, or please go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show if you'd like to post a comment or a question there. Pete, good to have you back.
Always great, Larry.
Hearing a lot about cloud computing these days, and I'm sure if everybody else like me, you've gotten all kinds of emails that relate to cloud computing. When we talk about it, what do we mean exactly?
Well, the cloud is always affectionately been referred to as the internet. You're attaching to the cloud. So the internet's always been pictured as, you know, a cloud on a diagram when you're mapping out strategies. But from a marketing standpoint, they're just using that as a buzzword. But it's things that we've actually been doing for years. And there are a lot of different aspects of it. One is meetings online, having virtual meetings where groups of people can actually collaborate and log in together and have open discussions, and everyone's in their own location. You don't have to travel. So that saves a lot of time, and it can happen very quickly. You know, you could say, hey, we want to have a meeting this afternoon. We need to go over this. And, you know, you could have 5, 10, 50 people, whatever the number is, and, you know, you just get together. Accounting systems. You no longer, you know, depending upon the type of solution you find for accounting, you don't even have to have your own internal server for your company. If you have 5 people or 10 people you need on an accounting system, or 50 people or 100 or several hundred, it can all be done in a cloud-based solution with a web server and the application installed on that, and people basically log into it wherever they are. Backups, not only backups from a data standpoint, but backups from an infrastructure in terms of providing a web service to your to your clients. And let's say you have a problem with your web hosting setup, you could actually configure a backup in another part of the cloud to take over if your main system fails. So businesses are using it that way. Email, people have been using Hotmail, Google Mail. Yeah. That's cloud computing, because you're logging into the cloud to their system and doing work that way with your email. Maps. For years, companies sold map applications where you bought the mapping information on a disk, installed it on your computer, and now Google Maps, MapQuest, Map Blaster, that's all cloud computing.
So the list
is endless.
What about personal? What about family use?
Family use, people use it for sharing pictures. Mm-hmm. You know, that's cloud computing. Facebook is a cloud computing application that people log into. It's not new to us. It's just a different name.
Just a different marketing.
It covers a lot of different areas.
And I know we're using it at the UW-Madison for educational purposes. I mean, and I think it has a lot of advantage for educational institutions. Mm-hmm. You know, the possibility for lectures and class discussions that you don't have to be in the classroom per se.
Well, all the online classes have been taught for years. It's all cloud computing.
Yeah. Well, we don't have callers online yet, probably because they didn't give the number. So let me give the number, 1-800-642-1234. That's the number to call with your question. 1-800-642-1234. I had a Facebook comment from Mary who wondered if you would please ask you what are the basic maintenance steps we should take for our desktops and laptops to maximize performance. I check the tire pressure and change the oil in my car. I don't know what routine things I can do to prolong the working life of my computer. And we've gone over this, but it always bears repeating, I think, Pete.
One of the biggest things I think that slows down a lot of systems is that as people use their computer, they acquire applications, whether or not they download them or they install them from something they bought in the store. And then all of a sudden, these little icons mysteriously continue to propagate and appear in the lower portion of their right side of the screen. And they're basically, when they're confronted with a question, it says, do you want me to put it in your startup? You're trying, it's almost like a half on switch.
Mm-hmm.
And the computer's loaded these applications, even though you may not be using them. So they're just kind of slicing off little pieces of the computer's power. And the more and more you install, if you don't pay attention to that, all of a sudden you've got this whole string of little pictures in your lower right-hand corner of your screen. And what Windows has done now is it's kind of camouflaged it because it's kind of grouped them in Windows 7. You kind of hover over it, and there might be like six in this one little box. Like they grouped them together instead of seeing one. So
get rid of a lot of them.
What you can do is get rid of them. And if you click in MS Config and then click on the Startup tab, you'll see a whole list of them with checks in the checkboxes. The key thing is to write a list down of what the, you know, write the list down, and it might be hard to tell who they belong to. So if you write the list down, you give them numbers if you want, because they won't go away. When you uncheck them, they won't go away. They just won't be called up by the computer to start up automatically. But some of them you may be able to tell that they might be your antivirus program, which you want to leave on. But you may have applications like for HP printer that you don't really need, or something to do with pictures, or
video maybe,
instant messaging and video, things like that, that you can click off, and when you reboot your system, they'll disappear. They won't come back. And if it's something that you missed, you'll know.
Yeah.
Trust me, you'll know. The other thing is, hard drive space, paying attention to how much you actually have free. Windows 7 is a little bit better in terms of custom configuring how much space is available for your recycle bin, where you can actually just put in the number instead of like sliding down, going from 10% to 1%. Mm-hmm. But if you right mouse click on your recycle bin, click on Properties, and then configure your hard drive in Windows XP and Vista. Make it like 1% of the drive instead of a default 10%. We've talked about this before. If you do the math, you know, a 100-gig hard drive, which by today's standards is small, 10% of that is 10 gig.
Yeah.
And the default of the operating system is to let it be 10% of your hard drive space that it's allocating for deleting files. So the OS doesn't touch that. The other thing is in the system restore, Windows 7, I haven't found where you can actually configure. I think it's there. I don't do it as much, but it's a little bit more dynamic, but the prior versions of Windows defaults to 12% of your hard drive space. So when you're starting to bump up on the edge of storage, the system restore is a way to recover some of that space too. Same thing with the properties and in your system tools. Email, you know, if you're using an application, get rid of some excess old baggage, deleting, you know, some of the older email files, condensing, compressing.
Junk mail.
Browsers, clearing your history and your cache. There's an application that we've talked about before called CCleaner that is free and works well. And that's also a way to clean up your system registry. Usually I back it up just to make sure and then clean that too.
So lots that you can do.
Yep.
We have an email from Joseph. Can you provide a means of getting rid of the Google redirect virus? This is noticeable when you click on a specific site identified on a Google search only to be sent to a sales site instead of the desired web page.
Basically, that's your browser's been hijacked, and I believe there. I'm positive there's a fix for it. I haven't been confronted with it before, but hijacking your browser has been done over the years. If you do a Google search on browser hijacking, you'll find a way to get rid of it. That's the term.
Yep.
You know, it's just hijacking your browser, and you can probably go into your tools, internet options, or preferences, and change your home page. It's probably what's happened is it's locked into to this hijacked home page. The other thing is to download, make sure you download another browser on your system. I always talk about this, not just having one browser on your system, but maybe even a second or third. And the popular ones other than Internet Explorer is Firefox or Mozilla, and also Google's Chrome. And if one browser gets hijacked, you've got the other two to fall back on because they don't simultaneously hijack the other browsers. At least I haven't seen that yet.
Right.
Maybe I just planted an idea for somebody to try.
Oh, no. Marty in Germantown, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. I called with one question. I now have a piece of a second because I was still talking to the gal when he was giving the answer to the startup programs. And what I did not catch is how to get there to find out what your startup programs are.
What you do is type in... if you click on, which version of Windows do you have?
XP.
If you click on Start and then Run and then type in MSCONFIG,
okay.
MSCONFIG. Yeah, it stands for Microsoft Config.
Configuration, yeah.
And then hit Enter, and then you'll see the Startup tab.
Thank you. I got the MS Config, but I didn't.
Yep. Where to do
you
it.
You want to get it.
Yeah.
All right. My question is that I have an extremely full hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
This computer has lasted me for 5 years, which surprises me because I usually don't. I run laptops. And I'm wondering what I can remove, if there's any way to know what I can remove. While I was waiting for you to come on, I hit add or remove programs.
Mm-hmm.
I have got a million that I don't understand. And a whole bunch of them are Catalyst Control Center.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what they are.
Some of them are necessary where they might be tied in with other programs. Others might be older versions of things that you aren't using anymore.
Okay.
So it's almost like you need to just kind of look through your system and decide what you really use and what you aren't using. And then you can go back to that add and remove programs and take away the ones that you aren't using. Another way to gain some hard drive space is what I referred to before, where you resize your recycle bin.
I missed that one too, apparently.
Yeah. If you right mouse click on your recycle bin, the default size for that recycle bin for deleting files is 10% of your hard drive space.
Oh, man.
So if you right mouse click on recycle bin, click on Properties, and then reset your drive space to be 1%, you'll gain some hard drive space, and that might help it run better.
Okay, I'm doing that as we speak. You said 1% is enough?
Yep.
Great.
Actually, in Windows 7, what I do is I set it to just be 250 meg. That's plenty of space for data files and... You know, if I'm uninstalling an application, I really don't care.
Because
there's a lot more trouble to reinstalling an application by just telling the recycle bin to hold on to it after you've, say, remove all these files from a program.
Mm-hmm. So, right. How do you set it to 250 meg?
Actually, you can't in XP. You'll have to you'll have to just make it 1%.
Okay.
They got a little smarter. They said, nah, we should really actually put in, let people put a number in there.
Yeah. Well, and I do a lot of photography, so a lot of the stuff I throw is big.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other thing with pictures, you might want to consider one of those smaller hard drives that you can stick into. And when I mean smaller, I'm talking about like footprint, like a passport. I know Toshiba makes like a 500 gigabyte, 1 gigabyte. It's a real small drive. Looks like a deck of cards.
Oh, okay.
Plugs into your USB port. Doesn't even need power from an external source. And you can back up, you know, all your pictures. And that way, if you want to archive some of your older ones to gain some space, at least you'll have at least one copy of them.
And mine were backed up on an external.
Yeah.
And then the external crashed.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Fortunately, a computer geek friend of mine was able to restore it for me.
Yeah. Well, sounds like you're off to a good start here.
Yep.
You've took notes and you're ready to go. Marty, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Great of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. Rachel Owens, our on-air producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more calls now as we move along with Peter Green talking computers with him. Doug in Mequonigo, you are up next. Hi, Doug.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
Good.
I have two different computers. The older one is Windows Vista. The newer one I bought is a reconditioned computer for $100. They're both laptops. And my wife and daughter both use these primarily, and they have the older one with Vista so gummed up. It won't run anymore, and I'm not good enough at ungumming them to really get it to run better. So I want to put the system restore disks in that came with the computer and essentially wipe it all out. What I'm trying to do is save my photographs that they've saved on there, burn them to a disk, and I do that, and I go to read them to see that they're on the disk. I'll take them out and put them in my work computer, which has XP. And it says I have a blank disk. Any ideas?
Two things come to mind. One is sometimes the media that you use in one system is a little finicky with another one. And the other one is, Are both systems compatible in terms of are you burning a DVD and then trying to put in, you know, a DVD into a CD drive? Or
no, they're all DVD drives.
Yeah.
The thing is, the first computer I'm talking about that I want to essentially wipe it out, the DVD drive no longer works.
Okay.
And that may be just something, once I reload everything, it'll work again. There may be something that somebody got into at one time or another and fiddled with it, because I can't even get it to eject.
Right.
And so I've got an external DVD drive that I plug in there. Well,
okay.
I can take that DVD drive out and plug it into the other, because I've tried multiple different ways of reading this disk, either using my drive that was in my laptop or plugging this external drive into my other laptop.
Right.
And they all said the same thing, that this is a blank disk. There's nothing on it.
So you're taking that
ideas.
So you're taking that external drive that you created a disk on the Vista system.
Yes.
And then you're taking that external drive, attaching it to the XP system.
Yes.
And trying to read that disk.
Yes, or I use the one that's in my computer, which is a DVD drive. Neither one of them tells me there's anything on that disk. Now, I can go into the Vista computer, go in, click on the external drive coming in through the USB port, and I can look at my pictures or watch the videos. But I take it to another computer, and it tells me there's nothing there. I'm going to have to spend some money, aren't I? That's what it's looking like. I got the pros stumped here. Who knows? You know, maybe I'll take it into somebody and they'll do a hickey switch set wrong here, and that's why.
So you're trying to move your files off of that system, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. I would actually I would go with a passport or an external drive and copy the folders that you need off of that one system that you want to, you know, use the restore disk on, and then hook that external hard drive up to the other system. Because that XP and Vista both support USBs. So then you can plug it into the XP system and then copy files to it or read it and so forth.
And that's not too expensive either.
Yeah, they're price-wise, I think they're $50 to $80 for, you know, the Toshiba quality one. But there are other brands out there that work just as well. You know, and test it in your XP drive first and then, you know, copy a folder to it and then move it over to your Vista system and see if you can look at it. And then, you know, just test it before you fully vest into, you know, moving files back and forth.
Okay.
If you're using the, you know, the DVD or CD drive, the CDs storage-wise, you know, those are roughly, let's say, 400 to 500 megabytes. DVDs are typically 4 gig range. Unless you have a dual layer, then you're looking at, you know, 8 to 9. But it, time-wise and seek time, you know, in terms of being able to read and copy data files, you're going to be a lot happier with having an external hard drive to do that, because they spin it a lot faster and the transfer rates are a lot faster. And if you use FireWire, which I'm telling you not to because you won't have the hookups in your system, but people that have Apple computers use FireWire, and then there's external ESATA interfaces that are even faster. So,
yeah.
But for your purpose, you want a USB external drive.
Well, that might even be a bad idea just to back things up.
Yep.
Well, you're going to use that in the future, too, for backups, not just for doing this game, but, you know, the next game that you got to play.
There you go. Thanks, Doug.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
Appreciate the call. Oh, Steve, our engineer, was commenting on CDs, and he said, you know why they made the CDs the size they did? They'll handle about 75 minutes or so, four inches. Because originally that was the size they determined that could cover Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. I could get the whole symphony on it. So if you get the whole symphony on it, that should be good enough.
All right. Not anymore.
Not anymore. Mike in Chicago, we're on to you now. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Hey.
I have a new computer that my company had purchased. The problem I'm running into is I can't sync up my inbox to download all the stuff that's on there on our server. Everything else is downloading, our sent, everything. Contacts, inbox is not working. It's not synced up.
So it's, you're breaking up here, but... So,
can you still hear me?
Yep.
So it's been about 3 weeks, and they've gone to Microsoft, IBM, and they can't figure out the problem.
So you're trying to sync up your inbox off of a web server that you're downloading emails? Is it, you know, from your internet service provider? Is that the problem?
It's we have a server at the office.
Okay.
I'm in a different state. I'm in Chicago.
Okay.
In Wisconsin, I can get onto the web, web access to an Outlook web. Version, I guess it's called. But when I do regular Outlook, nothing's there in the inbox. So it's not downloading it to regular Outlook. It just the web version is there.
You may want to check with. It sounds like there's an. Is it coming back with a message that says it's not connecting? You know, there's got to be some error message, because if you connect, the positive result is you're going to be getting your email. But if you're not connecting, usually you get feedback that, you know, you can't log in. There's some kind of detailed error as to why it can't complete its action, because Outlook is not going to spin its wheels and not give you an answer. It will either get hung up or it will... you know, tell you it's not able to log in, or it's going to tell you an error message as to why it can't you know, complete in action. So
really hasn't sent any error message. It just has, you know, Outlook. When I pull up regular Outlook, mm-hmm. it just everything else is downloaded. When I go to inbox, it's blank. Hmm. I have a BlackBerry, which the server's connected to as well,
mm-hmm.
And I'm getting all my emails on my BlackBerry. But it's just not going into the new Outlook that's downloaded onto the new computer that I have.
Okay. Mm. Well, one thing I would try is I would, you know, and you said it's Microsoft Outlook, right? So
yes.
I would uninstall and reinstall it and go through, all, you know, make sure you got all the configurations that you need in order to access the email. So that's one thing that I would try to do. The other thing is it an internal email system that's from Microsoft Exchange, or is it an internet service provider's email?
Well, I think there are two. I mean, I think it's an Exchange system with the phone, and we have an internal server at the office.
Okay.
I'm not real techy, as you can tell.
Okay.
We've pulled like seven different consultants on this.
Uh-huh.
We've gone on the Microsoft forum and posted, and they basically are going to wipe it out completely and start from scratch, but mm-hmm. they still don't know if that's going to resolve the issue.
Yeah. The other thing is you may want to tell them to just set up another email, address for you. So in other words, set it up with maybe, you know, I don't know how yours is set up now, first initial, last name, or, you know, however it is.
Mike
but,
at whatever.
But set up another email box for you and then just forward to that and then try and see if you can successfully set up on the new email box. Maybe for whatever reason there's just a problem with that email box that was set up. The other thing is
that's a good idea.
The other thing is to see if you can log into there's usually like a management system to log into an email, mm-hmm. whether it's Microsoft Exchange server, you know, how to get into that is they should be able to give you access to your inbox, not through Outlook, but through a web browser and maybe a call to your domain with webmail attached to it. But there needs to be some other way for you to access that. And, just make sure you can log into that and scan through that. And before you start tinkering with making that email box gone, make sure you get the stuff that you want saved out of there so
yeah.
that, you know, nothing disappears. But there should be another way for you to access that email.
Yeah, through the web.
Yeah.
I can do it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right, good luck. Thank you very much.
But yeah, setting up another one to forward to, and then forward yeah. the emails and see if that works. Sometimes these things glitch, and it's a matter of just trying to work through them and see where it might be.
Jerry in La Crescent, Minnesota, it is your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. Thank you for the call, taking my call. I have a screen that continuously pops up. It says power or PC power speed, and it says there are still 577 issues remaining to be fixed. And then they want you to click on fix the issues or continue with errors. And then they say, brought to you by the developers of Spyware Terminator. 30 million users can't be wrong. So if I click on this, I think they want to sell me something.
Right, yep, you don't want to do that.
Could it also be a scam?
Yep. Yeah, so you don't want to do that. So
how do I get rid of this? It pops up all the time. I mean, I can't turn on my computer without having it come up. I would click off of it, but I'm...
Oh, let's see. There's what's happened is something has infiltrated your system, and they're trying to sell you something. So you're correct. You don't want to click on that and carry through, because they'll just keep bugging you even after you pay the money.
But do they have something, and how did they know I had 577 issues?
Are you using any antivirus software in your system?
I am.
What are you using?
Trying to think of it now.
It's, Norton?
I'm not.
Well, let's ask the next question. Are you keeping it up to date? As far
I do.
As...
I send in the money for it whenever they request, and yeah, I do.
Okay. Well, you can try. I'll give you some programs to see if you can get access to them, and see if you can download them, and see if they, okay. they might rid your system of them. One is called Malware Bytes.
Malware Bytes.
Yeah, M-A-L-W-A-R-E-B-Y-T-E-S. So if you okay. do search on Malware Bytes, you'll find the link to that.
Okay.
You can also, if you go to infostar.com, my page, and then click on the tips, the very last tip that I have talks about how very detailed information on how to remove these some of these really bad versions of what you have, because they can almost disable your computer.
Could they be slowing it down?
Yep, absolutely.
Because it takes forever to
yeah.
do that now.
Yeah. Do you know how long ago you got it?
Oh, it's been a year.
No.
I just keep clicking off. It's yeah. I don't want to pay the $39.
No.
Yeah,
no.
It's been like you've kind of coexisted with it, because
yeah.
I was going to say if it just happened like within the last week, you might be able to do a system restore and it might be gone, but I'd say over years it's not going to happen. So if you download Malware Bytes, maybe that might be able to remove it.
Okay.
You may need to work with someone using that last
sure.
Tip that I had to
sure.
Help you get rid of it.
Okay.
If you download another antivirus program like AVG or Avast, you may have to download those programs on another computer.
Okay.
And burn a CD with them, or put them on a thumb drive or an external drive, and then copy them over and install them on your system. Because the simple act of trying to go and get those programs may trigger this little buggy message that you're seeing to do other bad things.
Okay.
That it may sense, hey, you're trying to get rid of me, and I don't like that. So it starts to, you know, rear its, you know,
ugly head even
ugly
more.
Head and even more.
Could this be a legitimate service?
No.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
There you go.
No legitimate service is going to keep bugging you with a sales call like that when you don't want it.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Dave in Grand Chute, let's turn to you now. Hi, Dave.
Hey, good morning. This will be a quickie again, but I'm afraid it's another one about getting rid of stuff. I'm looking at in the control panel on the uninstall section, and I'm just wondering, is it necessary to keep every one of these updates? For example, I have Java here, and there's four updates, and they're all 136 megs. Do you need to keep everything going all the way back, or just the latest?
That's a good question. Depending upon the manufacturer, the software company.
Three of them are Sun Microsystems, one
yeah.
is Oracle.
You may want to do a little background research on that. In other words, do a Google search, or you could even go to Sun Micro and see if the updates are cumulative updates.
Okay.
In other words, if it's a cumulative update,
yeah.
Then anything prior is going to be covered with the last one.
Yeah, what I'm looking at is there's update 3.5.7.26. And then there's one that's there's one that says runtime environment 6.
Mm-hmm.
But I have the same question about down here, the Microsoft MS XML 4.0 SP2, and there's about 6 of those.
Yeah.
They're not that big. They're 1.5 meg about. But.
How old's your system?
I put 7 on last year, but
okay.
The computer's older than that.
Yeah, and do you know how large the hard drive space is?
I think it's 200, I think.
Yeah. Well, probably in the scheme of things, those updates are probably pretty minuscule.
Yeah,
you know, in terms
of
size.
I've got plenty of room. I'm just wondering if it's
yeah.
a little cluttered.
But you bring up an interesting question in terms of which ones are cumulative updates. and cover prior stuff and which ones aren't, so you know, potentially removing them. But when you talk about things in terms of size of, like, you know, 1 meg or 10 meg, you know, in the scheme of things, it's pretty small, so most people tend to ignore them.
Okay. And I've gone into the start menu. Now, I'm not there now, but it seems to me like there's some repetition there, too. But same problem, I suppose. Huh?
Yeah.
Don't get rid of anything.
Well, when you say the start menu, you're talking about, like, when you click on...
when I go into MS Config and look at what's starting up every
time. You know, write down a list.
Yeah,
put in the checkboxes, and then, you know, if some of them look similar and you can't really tell what they are, you know, just make sure that, you know, if it's affecting your antivirus program or spyware program, that kind of stuff, that, you know, just pay attention to that and make sure that that's running.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our guest today. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Pete, we have an email from someone who's inherited a MacBook with both Mac OS and Windows 7. Used to have a Dell computer. One thing I've noticed is I can no longer figure out how to record streaming audio with a recording program I used to use, or any recording program for that matter. The options do not include stereo mix, for example. I play sound from my microphone into my speakers and can record from this source. However, the quality's bad. Do you have any solutions for me?
So it's can't really tell, you know, using a MacBook and you've got two OSs on it, and I would think that it sounds like the OS that's being used in that case with the streaming audio is probably the Windows 7 portion, and the hardware is really optimized for using the Mac OS. Mm. And my best guess would be to go to use the Mac OS for the work that you're trying to do, because there's probably something amiss, because what's going on in the Windows 7 on that Mac system is it's kind of being faked into using the screen, the keyboard, but the fit to the accessories, the other components of the hardware, is where things are not playing out in, you know, the best way. So my guess, best guess would be, you know, you're going to have to work on the Mac side to do your music stuff to get your best result.
And an email from Gina: is there a way to search history after it's been cleared?
Search history after
after you got rid of it.
Probably not, because the act of clearing the history is it's wiping out this temporary file space on your system to clear it so that it can be filled with all new space. And it's like a scratch pad, and you're just wiping it and starting over again. So... you're not going to be very lucky there. Now, if it was a deleted file that was something where the computer, I mean, in a desperate sense, okay, in a very desperate sense, you could, and this would, in its best way, best case scenario, is you'd have to have an undelete program already installed on your system. And you would not have had to have done anything else.
Yeah.
And you might be able to, and I have never used it this way, you might be able to backtrack and try to undelete things that the operating system has deleted. The only other solution to that would be to see if there's a program that can undelete or undo the last... reaction, you know, last actions of the operating system. System Restore and Time Machine, you know, I don't know if they really deal in that sense, because those are typically not things that are of high priority. So you'd almost have to research that and see how that would play out, if it's even possible.
On to Mary in Madison. Mary, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a thumb drive, which I took to a print center, and, it took so long to bring up on their console. So the person took it behind the counter and, among other things, took the thumb drive and twisted it around like as if it wasn't in the drive correctly. And then I also recall him taking his car key and swiping the end portion of the thumb drive, of which after he got through with all of that, it said, would you like to reformat the drive? And I'm trying to get my data back.
Hmm. Sounds like a finicky drive. The only thing I could recommend trying to do is trying to, just carefully insert it into a number of different ports and see which one you might luck out and get it to actually read. They feel solid, but, the part that's amiss is the connection, on your end, putting it into the port on the other end. And, sometimes moving it around, just not putting, I've had it where you put it in all the way and it doesn't make the connection, but if you pull back on it, you see the reaction of the light reading it.
Yeah.
It's giving you a little inkling. Well, obviously you're going through the problem now, but if, people are out there and have drives like that, it's giving you a little indication that, eventually it could go and not work anymore. So as far as other solutions to try and recover that, I have not personally broken up or opened up one of those, thumb drives and, see how they attach to another. You'd have to really tinker with, the connections and things to try and hook it up. But I'm sure there are some recovery services out there that might be able to, remove the solid-state memory that's on that thumb drive and probably put it into another device.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to find out who they are.
Would you know any in the local area?
Madison area?
Usually that kind of stuff, I would just go online and see what your options are.
Right.
And you could put in Madison, Wisconsin, and see if there are any specialists out there. I know Disk Manager works with hard drives. I don't know I believe they were based in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where they are now, but, in terms of doing things like disaster recovery, you plug in Madison, Wisconsin, thumb drive or USB memory stick, just a whole bunch of different combinations to see what you can come up with in terms of, recovery.
Mm-hmm.
But
try, two or three different systems and, put it in and then slowly slide it out and see if you can get some connection going.
Okay, I will. It's I wouldn't spend so much time on it, but it's a lot of work that I've had over multiple years on it.
No.
I would just like to get my... I know better next time. I'll have a backup.
Yep.
There you go, Mary. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Good luck.
An email from Cindy. Could you give me a recommendation for a program to make DVD video movies from my pictures? I want to be able to add transitions, text, music, even a menu and chapters like a regular DVD movie. I've used Windows DVD Maker and Windows Live Movie Maker, but I want more options and bells and whistles.
Well, I know on the Mac you can do all that stuff.
Oh, man, you can do all that stuff on the Mac. I mean, there's so much fun.
What's the Mac program called?
I've got it.
It's just sitting there on your computer.
Yeah, sitting on the computer. I can't think of it.
But you know what I would actually do? I mean, I know there's a program I talked about years ago that I had to use for my kids because Windows wouldn't burn a DVD. It would let you create the video, but it wouldn't let you burn a DVD that you could actually use in a machine. It was called DVD Santa. But I would go on CNET, CNET.com, and look under reviews for, you know, video composing or video editing software, and you'll find reviews out there. And you can even type in Mac video video music solution, and then look at the features on the Mac software, and then key in some of the features that you're looking for, and just do a Google search on it and see what you come up with.
Does all kinds of really cool things. The Mac one, it even does a little credit crawl like you see across the
transitions
bottom.
Everything.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
So there.
Or
you,
ask
there.
To borrow a friend's, you know, Mac and and do some composing with that.
Yeah. Why not? Chris in Darlington, hello to you.
Hi. I've got a quick question. I have a new laptop, and I have Windows Starter. Word Starter, Microsoft Word Starter. And I don't like the fonts. So what I've been doing is copying and installing fonts. And my question is, am I going to use up too much space on my laptop? Should I put all these fonts on a USB device instead?
You said it's a new laptop, right?
Yes.
Do you know what size hard drive do you have on it?
4.
4 gigs?
Well, yes. 4 gigs of memory?
Yes.
Do you know if it's like a 250, 320 hard drive?
Oh, I don't know anything, hon.
Well, in terms of the fonts, I, you know, we used to be concerned about fonts taking up a lot of room, but not anymore. You can keep adding them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Thanks for calling.
Yep. You mentioned the Word Starter program. You know, here's another cloud application, you know, Google Docs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there are, and we go to the cloud to get software all the time. There's, you know, Star Office, and there are other products or alternatives other than Microsoft Office that are out there that are free or inexpensive. So, you know, there are other solutions for, you know, word processing that are available for people to download.
On to Scott and Shano. Hi, Scott.
Good morning.
Hi.
Still morning, I guess.
Yeah.
I recently made the switch from a PC to a Mac. I've been a PC guy for, you know, 15 years since I've been using home computers, and recently made the switch to a Mac. And the one thing that I am unable to find that I am looking for, you know, on a PC, if you right-click down in the lower left-hand corner, you pull up an Explore option, and when you click on that, then you see basically a map of, I think of it as a file system.
Okay.
That shows you the layout of your entire hard disk for the most part.
Right.
At least a consumer, non-computer guru type information that I need has always been there. But I can't find a similar layout that shows me where everything is on my Mac, and I'm wondering if you can point me in the right direction.
Well, Finder is the kind of the file manager program, and if you were to download, you can't really download it, but you can download it to try it. But Adobe makes what they call Bridge, and it's part of their Creative Suite product, which gives a little bit more visual. You know, if you want to call it street or desktop appeal to managing files on a Mac, but Finder is really the way to manage the files on the Mac system. And if you right mouse click on anything, you can click on info, and it gives you a lot more details about, you know, what you're looking at. And you can change priorities and colors and things like that. But
okay, all right. So use Finder. When I clicked on Finder, it looks more like a search tool, but it doesn't seem to bring up an overall map of the hard drive.
Well, there are different picture configurations in Finder.
Okay, I'll just hunt around until I find one that I like.
Yeah, and then in the top left where you see your system. You're going to have the name of your hard drive, the name of your computer. If you plug in an external hard drive, you'll see that listed. You know, when you click on those, then it starts giving you the layout of what you have. It's a little, you know, all operating systems are a little different in how they try to present their information reports to you. There's probably an application out there that could probably give you a lot more, like what you're looking for. And, you know, if go to cnet.com, go to downloads and do a search on, you know, just plug in some variations of what you're looking for in the Mac, and you might find somebody that, you know, dressed one up for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Alrighty. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Good luck.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. All kinds of questions.
Always.
All the
life's
time.
Filled with them.
Oh, life's filled with them. And Peter Green is here to help answer some of those questions. Pete with InfoStar of Madison, who visits us monthly to help with your personal computer problems. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Computers can be a tool or a toy or sometimes both at the same time. But however we use them, it can be hard to keep up with the latest news and product releases. You feel like you're keeping up with the new developments, or you're worried you might be missing out on some helpful improvements. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today on the Ideas Network, and Peter Green of InfoStar here until 12:30 to give us advice and to answer your questions. And he will share this month's top 10 list of useful websites with us as well. Hope you'll join in the conversation. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. And don't forget our Facebook page. Go to the Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question there or a comment. And while you're there, click like to receive regular updates on upcoming show topics. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Peter after this look at the news. Taking a look at your personal computing issues today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant. We have lots of callers online and lots of emails, but we also have a top 10 list, and I want to get to that, Pete. What have you got for us today?
Okay, if you go to InfoStar.com, click on Current Top 10 or the Top 10 Archives and scroll to today's date, they're all there. This first one, my daughter brought it to my attention. It's pretty neat. And obviously very popular, if 13 million plus sites have been created with it. It's called Wix, W-I-X.com, and allows you to create your own free Flash-enabled website. And she was just showing me things you can do with pictures and stuff, well, creating videos probably. Number two is called MintWrite, and it's a global ebook distribution platform system. And what you have to understand in the ebook world is that the Amazon Kindle, the Barnes & Noble Nook, and other e-books are not all created equal, and there are different things that you have to do to manage your publication for that. So, you know, it's worth taking a look at if you're interested in that. Number three is for web advertisers. And the website's called actualkeywords.com, and they maintain a current database of 174 million phrases of key phrases used in search engine queries in search engines.
Oh, man.
And then I link to an article to help you understand more about how to use using keywords. Number four is called roadbikereview.com, and it's a cycling resource that includes reviews by manufacturers and forums, and you can post your own classified ads. Number five, unfortunately, had a person I knew locally that died from this, was a young man, a hockey enthusiast in the Verona area. It's called histio.org, H-I-S-T-I-O.org, and it's Histiocytosis Association. It's a global nonprofit organization dedicating to addressing the unique needs of patients and families dealing with this disease. Number six is called calendar-365.com. So if you're looking for calendars and figuring out what days of the week and holidays and vacation if you're going to take and all that stuff, it's a great site to, to use. Number seven, if I pronounce this right, had no idea it's been going on since 2000, but it's called Habbo, H-A-B-B-O.com. If there are any teens listening to this, they know what I'm talking about. It's a social networking site aimed at teenagers since the year 2000. Has expanded to include 11 online communities or hotels with users in over 150 countries. To date, there are 203 million what they call avatars registered. Number eight, I think I might have mentioned this, so I actually put in number 11. It's called thegateway.org, and it's sponsored by the National Education Association. It's a consortium to help provide educators with quick and easy access to thousands of educational resources. Number nine is called schooltree.org. It's if you're looking for schools or charter schools, magnet schools, private schools, 140,000+ that you have access to. Number 10 is called App Appeal. It's a searchable directory of web applications, includes reviews and comparisons. And the last one, like I said, a bonus one, Helium, a knowledge cooperative where their writers are also their editors who read and rate every article on their site. Learn their phrase, learn what you need, share what you know. And if you've got something knowledgeable and you want to write, it's potentially a way to earn some money.
There you go. Well,
I haven't tried it too much, but it looked interesting. And there's another one up there, too, or maybe I'll mention that next month.
And just go to Infostar.com, today's date, and over in the left side.
The current.
Current date.
Yep.
We go to Karen in Richland Center now. Karen, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is this. I went away on vacation and somebody was here staying at the house. And when I came back and turned on my computer, I found something called Add-ons Disabled Windows Internet Explorer. And so every time I turn on my computer, I get this screen with everything on it. You know, I've got my toolbars on top, but it says add-ons are disabled. And then the lower third of my screen says Internet Explorer is currently running without add-ons, and it says, let's see, in order to get rid of the add-ons, I should close the Internet Explorer and then start it again. Well, I do that, and I just keep on getting this screen. So is it important that I have add-ons? What are add-ons, and do I absolutely need them? And, you know, I can go to Mozilla, and Mozilla comes up just fine, and I can actually go over to the home icon and click on home, and that takes me to my home page. It's just that every time I turn on my computer, this screen comes on first, and I'm just wondering what's going on, and do I absolutely need add-ons? What are add-ons?
Add-ons are programs that plug into the browser, so each one has its own set of plugins. Java would be an add-on, Macromedia, Flash, Silverlight.
You're right, Flash Driver. Every time I want to play a video, it says you have to download Adobe, even though Adobe is right on my desktop.
Yep. So those are add-ons.
But if I go to Mozilla Firefox and I want to play a video, no problem.
Yeah, it's a little bit more user-friendly. Internet Explorer seems to have had a personality issue in dealing with add-ons and begging the question of the end user, do you want me to do this or not? And I'm shut off, but do you want to ask me later? And to be honest with you, I think Microsoft just doesn't have their act together. And they seem impent on frustrating the end user with their online experience.
So what do I do? Does it matter? Do I have to have it? I don't need add-ons, do I?
You don't.
I mean, in this particular, in Windows.
If you're using Firefox, you might want to also download Chrome so you have another browser to back up to. But if you're not using Internet Explorer, I wouldn't waste my time being concerned with it.
Okay.
I would just, you know, if it used to be that you needed Microsoft Internet Explorer to interact with Microsoft's site for updates and so forth, but they're pushing them now to your system rather than you going out there and asking Microsoft for them. So it's not as much of an issue as it used to be. So you don't.
This is no big deal. I mean, it's not like my computer's broken or.
Nope.
All righty.
You could also. The other thing is, I don't know if you have Internet Explorer 8 or 9, but you could also download an update to Internet Explorer 9, and when you're installing it, just answer the questions, and then it probably won't bother you after that.
Okay, very cool. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate it. I have a question here from George. I had the Google redirect hijack problem. Oh, this is going back to an earlier call. Yep. Google redirect hijack problem a while ago and found out you can copy the URL address from the Google search results and then paste it into the address bar and it won't redirect. So you can look it up the fix.
Oh.
That way, you can just go ahead and look up the fix.
That's cool.
That's a cool way to do it.
Yep.
And recommendations for the lady with the corrupt thumb drive. Gilware is in Wisconsin, or you could try Kroll OnTrack in Texas. May try OnTrack software first, too. They're expensive, but maybe the only option on the thumb drive. Actually, if you want to... those who have had questions that were partially answered or whatever, go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Some people have posted comments relating to some of these, and it might be worth it just taking a look.
Yeah, the disk manager I referred to was made by OnTrack. They've been out there for a long time.
For a long, long time.
Yep.
And, of course, it's iMovie, somebody else said.
Yeah.
For the person who wanted to make the movie out of stills and so forth.
Well, you shouldn't, Larry, it's I something.
Yeah, it's always I.
We couldn't think of the I what.
Nick in Green Bay, we're turning to you. Hi, Nick.
Hi, I've got a small problem. I'm a gamer, so I don't even do anything with a word processing. But I recently lost my job, and the new company is going to pick me up. So I had my old boss give me a letter of recommendation.
Okay.
Well, I don't like this job, so I want to quit. And I want to use my letter of recommendation. The only problem is he put on the top, he addressed it to the new company that I was going to work for.
Right.
And I want to scan it in and just edit that.
Okay.
And how do you do that? Because like I said, I'm a gamer. I know lots about computers, about gaming, but processing, I do as little work on my computer as possible.
So you've got a hard copy of that, right?
Yeah, I was just going to scan it in my computer and, you know.
Yeah. When you scan it in, if you've got, you know, a multi-purpose, you know,
I use Open Office, though.
Okay. The software that comes with the printer, usually there's like a junior version of scan software. It's not real elaborate, but it will it will let you scan in and turn it into a Word document or a PDF file.
Yeah.
So you should be able to do that if you've got the, you know, printer scanner to do it. There's also companies out there that make real elaborate programs. You can download, you know, a trial version of the OCR software, but that's what you're looking for is optical character recognition software.
Oh, okay.
But it usually comes with the printer. So if you've got a scanner, that's one of the things that is the basic reason why. It's either scanning in pictures or you're scanning in a document and you want to turn it into a text file.
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you for calling. Gene in Woodruff. Hello to you.
Hello.
Hi.
A couple suggestions. The gal that was looking for video editing software for Windows could try ULEAD or Roxio. Those are both pretty low cost and pretty effective.
Yep. I remember using ULEAD. Yep. It's a good
product. And for the fellow with the inbox that didn't work, I had something similar after a power outage recently, and I found out that my firewall was blocking the dump of the backed up messages. into the inbox, and I turned off the firewall temporarily, and my inbox filled up. I turned back on my firewall, and it was fine.
Good.
Sounds good.
So, something to try.
Thank you much, Jean. Joan, appreciate it very much. Jean from Woodruff with a couple of good comments there. And we've got Mitch in Green Bay next with a question. Hi, Mitch.
Hi. I've got a older Vista machine that's in my desktop machine here, and I want to upgrade the service pack, but I'm not connected to the internet. I take a Windows 7 computer, and I go to I got a laptop, and I go to the cafes. How do I download the upgrade service pack so I can use it on my at home computer that's not connected?
There should be a link that you should be able to find on Microsoft's site to to download that service pack in its entirety, so that you could either burn it to a disk or copy it to a thumb drive.
I went through that a while back, and I couldn't find anything. They blocked me all the time, saying that they would scan my machine and say it's the raw, it's not the correct machine to do it, or not the correct operating system.
Even after doing a search on their site,
no, I did. Yeah.
If you look for if you type in Microsoft Knowledge Base, and you know, look for the link to their knowledge base, you should be able to do a search on Vista Service Pack update, and there's usually a white paper that describes what's included in the what's included in it, and how to go about you know, obtaining it.
Okay.
So you should be able to find a solution on their site for getting the absolute link, because I know, like, in all the operating systems, I've always been able to download the file that includes a service pack so that I could move it to multiple machines. So it's out there. It's just finding the link to get to it.
The reason why I'm getting that is because, well, my machine works fine here. Anytime I make a disk or anything like that, like to give somebody some photos or do anything with it, everybody will get a disk that says it's blank, no matter which computer they go to, except the Vista that does not have an upgrade. If the Vista has the upgrade, it'll tell you that the disk is blank. And even if I use it, I did it on a thumb drive, and Windows 7 and the previous one before Vista, they couldn't read it. It showed as a blank, but it would say in there that the disk was full. If you looked it up under computer, and you looked at your disk, it would say it's full. And there's some idiosyncrasy in Vista that's plagued me all the time doing this.
So that's why you're looking for the service pack.
That's why I'm looking for the service pack.
It sounds like one of our earlier callers had a similar situation where he wasn't able to read the disks, and it was...
It's solely because the way certain units of Vista, and the one on a Toshiba machine was very bad. Toshiba's adaptation of the early Vistas was just totally terrible with that. I've got one on a Gateway, and that is sporadic, but it'll give me one. I can get one good disk out of maybe 20.
Yeah, Microsoft should be giving all the Vista users free upgrades to Windows 7. That's my opinion, because it's just there's no reason.
Well, I talked to one guy that works supposedly works one. He said that has caused more problems. The using the Windows upgrade to 7 that they had out earlier, when they were first coming with it, and they still had Vista on the machines, and they gave you a coupon to go back to it.
Right.
I've had he told me that he had a lot of problems, had a lot of services on those machines because that didn't do the job.
Yeah, and usually when I've done upgrades, it's actually not upgrading the machine from one OS to another, but actually reinstalling Windows 7.
Right.
Because that works.
That works
fine.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I don't think.
I think a lot of people did instead of doing the reinstall, did the upgrade.
Right.
Option, which was supposed to be quicker, and they didn't compat. They weren't compatible.
Right.
Okay, thank you much.
Yeah, yep. Thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Beth in Appleton, hi to you.
Yeah, hi. I have an older Mac iBook G4, and the only problem I have with it is when I'm on a website and click the Contact Us, it comes up with the Apple Mail, which I don't have an account with, and I want to tell it to come up with a Yahoo account or my Gmail account, something else. Do you know how to do that?
It's an association in I believe it would be Safari.
Yeah.
To tell it to pop up your, you'd have to put in your Yahoo link to the email. I'm not sure exactly where that is, but that's what's going on, is it's launching an association with your email system that's on your Apple, and you'd have to just change the association to go to a web link. Now, whether or not that's possible in your iBook, I don't know.
So,
but that's what's going on.
So what do I look for?
Probably in Safari. It would be either options or preferences, and you'd have to dig down in terms of whether or not it's called associations or maintenance. But you'll have to, you know, follow through on the links to see if it is a setting that you can change. And you have to have that Yahoo Mail change set up. You know, the link, you'd have to be able to key that in.
The link, is that like the POP or something like that?
It might be something like that to put in, or it might be just going to the site to launch the Yahoo Mail, you know, login screen.
Uh-huh. Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Susan in Shell Lake, you got a quick question.
Hi. I have a laptop, a Lenovo, and I've had it for about 3 years, and all of a sudden about, I don't know, several months ago now, a message popped up in the bottom right corner that tells me it's an invalid, you have an invalid Windows 7 or Windows application, and your version is not valid. I tried to follow their instructions for how to correct this and gave up, and now I just ignore it. But might that be a virus of some kind?
So it pops up in your right corner that just says
it tells me you have it. I don't remember the exact sentence, and I'm not there, and I've looked at it for so long, it's just...
Is it like a browser window, or is it just like it looks like from the operating system?
From the operating system.
Yeah. What may have happened is you have like an orphan link to an application that's no longer, you know, in operation on your system, or it's been upgraded, and they, for whatever reason, they didn't correct the link to it. So which version of Windows are you using?
7.
7?
Mm-hmm.
If you click... if you click start and put in MS config and then go to your startup window, see if you can find a line that refers to that program.
Okay.
Because it's probably got a checkbox next to it, and it's probably trying to start up.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, yep. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Pete, here we are out of time. Thank you so much.
Always flies so fast.
Oh man! And I'm looking at my Facebook page, and there are questions and answers to some of the questions,
which is great.
Yeah, which is great. I hope you keep it up. If you have a question, maybe somebody will have an answer if you post on the Facebook
page. It's hard
for
me to do. I wouldn't be going to sleep.
Oh, man. So go to the Larry Mueller Show and see if you can find. I know there are some answers that we just didn't have time to cover. Pete, thank you. You're back the first Monday of next month.
Yep.
Absolutely. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison will be back the first Monday in October. Just looking ahead, tomorrow, wildlife ecologist Scott Craven joins us to talk about the wonderful world of Wisconsin wildlife. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.